Before I get started today, I wanted to give a big shout out to Jeannie Colwin Coaching. Jeannie Colwin is a stress and mind body coach based out of Los Angeles. She's been on this podcast 3 times so far, and I especially want you to go all the way back to episode 210 to listen to her. In that episode, she guides you through a shorter breathwork session for decreasing stress and fear and releasing emotions so that you can heal mentally and physically. You know, we often talk about calming the nervous system on this podcast, cultivating more self-compassion, feeling our rage and other tough emotions. We know it's not just about learning or talking about these concepts. We've got to actually do the work, and many of us just don't know how. Through Jeannie's one-on-one coaching program, you will receive personalized support, accountability, and consistency to do just that. And of course, take back your health. Jeannie offers a free 45-minute consult where she'll give you customized strategies and offer somatic tools so you can take your next steps towards healing. Go to her website, jeanniecolwin.com. That's J-E-A-N-N-I-E. K-U-L-W-I-N, and book your free call to see if it's a good fit. Welcome back. It's the first day of February of 2023. I want to make sure that I give a shout out to the patrons of the podcast. And as a reminder, there have been a couple new patrons that have joined on. In order to, there's going to be a free to patrons. If you go to patreon.com/ the Mind and Fitness Podcast, free and available to patrons is a live Q&A. It is going to be on Wednesday, February the 22nd at 12 o'clock Pacific, 3 o'clock, 12 o'clock Pacific, 12 o'clock Pacific, 2 o'clock Central. That's 3 o'clock Eastern time. There's going to be a live Mind and Fitness Podcast, AMA, come and hang out for an hour, that kind of thing. So let me give a shout out to, and I will start at the very beginning. I'm on the wrong screen. Okay. Shout out to Barb, who actually gave me the idea for this. So thank you, Barb. And Arnie and Sarah, welcome back. And Brian and Julie, Ross, Christina, Mike, Michael, Tony, Kelly, Irina, Mindy, Jason, John, Sasha, Dominic, Enda, Elise, Amanda, Emily, Kirk, Daniel, Deborah, Albert, Julie, Jeff, and Albert. Thank you all so much for continuing to support the podcast every single week. Every single month, it honestly means the world to me. So thank you so much for coming back and continuing to support. I was on, as I record this yesterday, but as you're listening to this a couple of days ago, I was on the TMS Roundtable. I thought it was actually my third appearance, but I cannot find what I think is episode 2. So it might actually only be 2 appearances that I've been on this roundtable. So I had a great time meeting with Tova and Rose, and I would encourage you to go and check that out. It's actually, I think it airs every single Monday at 12 o'clock Pacific. But you can also go and check it out at tmsroundtable.com. This is pretty long. It's a little over an hour, so I'm going to skedaddle out of here. But I thought it'd be cool for you to get a listen to this. So it's going to function. It functions as a video show. You can find the replay on YouTube at this point. But I had a really good time kind of talking about some of the concepts that I've been just giving some more thought to recently. Here is Tova and Rose and I.
Good evening. Good morning, Rose, and good afternoon, Eddie. We're going to introduce you in a minute. I just want to say shalom. Hello. My name is Dr. Tova Goldfein. This is TMS Roundtable, Global.
This is from Israel.
This is number 145. What a celebration. Rose and I are clinicians, and for the last 30 years, we've been helping clients and patients recover and heal from everything from A to Z, chronic pain to autoimmune disease, and helping people find the doctor within. Tonight is number 145 show that we have a wonderful guest. And we're just going to continue our work until the end of time. I love you, Rose Boy in Melbourne. Hi.
Good morning, Tova. Good morning, Eddie. Now, today we've got Eddie in Lindenstein. Now, Eddie is an amazing TMSer, if you want to call it that. And what I also admire about Eddie is the fact that no matter what goes on, he keeps up his exercise, he continues his broadcasts, he continues to be out there for people. Oh, we've lost him.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Hopefully he'll be back in a minute.
He's making a grand entrance. Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. So if you think about it, Eddie keeps on going. And as we were inviting Eddie, I thought, let's have a look at courage, the courage to just always keep on going. So welcome, Eddie. I think this is maybe your third time to visit us. And thank you for being our guest.
Yeah, so, yeah. Thanks for having me. Sorry, I just dropped out for just a second. I don't know what happened, but I think we're good.
You're right. Yeah. So for anyone who doesn't know you, give them a little bit of background and then give them your courage. Share your courage.
Yeah. So I live in the Pacific Northwest, Seattle, Washington. So it is a good afternoon for me as of 3 minutes ago. I host the Mind and Fitness podcast, available on all podcast providers, and it's listened to by people all around the world. This is year. I always like to think of how many different years has the podcast touched? And since I started it in late 2017 and it's now 2023, this is year seven, even though we haven't had the sixth anniversary yet. So into the seventh year, which is awesome. I've done about 260 episodes or so. And I mean, you two from doing this show for, did you say 145? Is this one right?
145 broadcasts since March 2019.
Yeah, it's an enormous amount of work to continue doing content every single week. But when you're passionate about the topic and you care a lot about it, it probably doesn't feel like work, which is really sort of the goal of this. As far as me and the concept of courage, because Rose had kind of volleyed that out for me, I guess the best way maybe that I see it for me is that I think about this concept when I get asked something in the realm of when will I be cured or when will I be healed. I mean, other people are asking me that question, saying I've had this issue for could be 6 months or 6 weeks or could be 10 years or longer. And what I tell them is that the expectation for me and how I see it is not, and what I see as being healed or cured or whatever sort of vernacular we want to call it, is not that you're symptom free, because I think that's an impossible thing, but having the courage, like you had said, to go on with our daily lives and how I just talked about this concept on the show a couple of weeks ago. Having the foresight to say, I'm going to make plans to go do something like schedule a trip or go on an adventure or something like that. And regardless really of how I feel physically on that day, I know that it's going to go away in short order and it's not going to impede on anything that I do. And that's really where I see kind of the meat and potatoes.
Outcome independence.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
So in a lot of ways, that's how I see it. And I relate this back to before I knew about any of this, and my assumption was that all physical pains that are felt in the body are just they're the result of something mechanical. You lifted something too heavy, you were too strenuous with something that you did. Everything has a physical cause and origination. I really hesitated making physical plans, and I had not a whole lot to look forward to in general with life. The thing that I was thinking about probably 2 or 3 months before I had found Dr. Sarno's work and this whole concept and world had opened up to me, really. My wife and I did a 3-week trip across Europe. We went to Scotland. We went to England. We went to Ireland with our daughter, with our oldest daughter. And I remember in the weeks leading up to that, it's not that I was dreading the trip, but I was dreading how I would feel on that trip. And how liberating it's been. And I did. I had an expectation that the trip was going to hurt. And it, guess what? It hurt all throughout. but since then, and since kind of discovering a lot of the stuff, which was, I think, June or July of that same year. And the trip was in April. So I wish I would have just found it just a few months earlier. Would have been great. We've done everything we could possibly plan on doing as far as trips and adventures and doing all sorts of things at the maximum amount of physicality for some of it. And there's been no limitations. There's been no, I don't think I can do this, or I may not be able to do this because my back or my neck could feel crummy that day. Does that make sense?
Yes. Give us a couple of ideas of your adventures that you've done, despite the back, despite the neck.
Yeah, and then how you conversed or dialogued with your pain in order to get through the day. How did you relate with your family? How did you, were you angry? Were you fearful? Were you sad? Were you full of rage? Were you able to, did you stuff it more? Like, give us some ideas of what you did and how you dealt with the pain.
So probably the first one that comes to mind, because I'll have, and it'll happen occasionally, I was saying before we had started that the last time I was here, I was in the midst of kind of a, like, it really knocked me on my butt. This sort of, I don't really call them relapses, I don't really like the term flare either, so I don't know what we'll call it. We'll call it having issues or having pain or having symptoms or whatever. But the last time I was here, which was
You're having some deep feelings that are just being reflected in your body.
Which was a little under a year ago, was the last time that I would have been on here. There was a motorcycle trip that I was going on with some buddies of mine, and this would have been the summer of 19, so like July-ish of 19. And we were going to be taking a inter-country trip. So we were going from the U.S., and we were going to be touring parts of Western British Columbia, Canada. And a few days before that, I had had just the worst back spasm that you could imagine. It was really holding on tight as the days of this trip came up. However, there was no reluctance from me on A, doing the trip, but two, what are we going to do on the trip? And three, how long are we going to sit on our bikes? And, you know, so we had some days that were 10 or 12 hours on the road. Portions of it hurt or whatever. It did not impede on my time because I knew that it would be gone. And by the end of the trip, it was totally fine. So that's kind of what I mean, on that. And I'll have certain instances before like there was one we did last year, my buddies and I, where it was in the United States, it's called backcountry discovery, at least in the adventure motorcycle world. But really all that means is that you're crossing across an entire state and you're doing it entirely off-road. So off pavement, off tarmac, and you're doing it all off-road. And so last year, and a lot of times the areas that you go into are pretty remote. You don't have cell service. You don't really have anybody you can rely on other than yourself and the two people that you're with, like whoever it is you're going with on the trip. And for us, it was three of us total. Again, I was having my body was kind of just telling me some weird stuff in the days leading up to it, but it did not impact how the trip was going to go. And in fact, there was one really, really rough day there where I think I'd taken a wrong turn. And again, this is into the wilderness, and it was probably a quarter mile, doesn't sound that long, but a quarter mile, it was probably at a 45 degree angle on a heavy motorcycle. And the dirt and the terrain was so slick that like my brakes weren't doing anything. So I had wiped out. I mean, I probably dropped my bike in between just wipeouts and bike dropping that I had done on that day, probably a dozen, 15 times, something like that.
Tell me the verbiage. You dropped out.
So they're called, it's called drops, or some of them are called wipeouts. And a drop is more, you've picked up your bike and you drop it, as opposed to wipeout, which you're on it, you're riding it, and then you crash. They're usually low speed, something, 20 miles an hour or less, but you're still on a bike on a heavy motorcycle.
What CCs is a motorbike?
This 700 is the one I have now. So 452 pounds, about 200 kilos, for the non United States watching people. I have to make sure I've got for instance, outside and in my garage right now, it's -4 Celsius. But that translates to 25 Fahrenheit, which is why I'm wearing this ridiculous big giant puffy coat on this show. But nevertheless, so we did the trip. My lower back was just not feeling as optimal as it could. But I still dropped that bike and picked it up. It's 452 pounds. I still picked it up 15 times, and there was no problems. I didn't have any issues. It was like full strength. I didn't know there was no. So to me, that there's parts in Sarno's book where he had talked about interactions with patients where, they'll say they can't bend over to pick up a 15 pound baby or a 10 pound baby or something like that. But yet they can pick up, they can go outside and do yard work for several hours and they'll have no problems. So I kept kind of telling myself that during the trip, and everything was fine. later in the day, I did have an actual crash where I was bucked off the bike and I did hit my head on a boulder and I did have a concussion. And so that was a totally different kind of thing. But still, my attitude was the same as it was with the back issues. My head definitely, like, something was off. And we did the day finish not long after that. And I did get a CT scan and all that kind of stuff, and it was okay. But, you know, head trauma is a serious thing. But what I kept telling myself is, like, whatever has happened has happened, and I'll deal with it when it comes up. And that's all there is to it. There's nothing I could do in terms of panic or anything like that.
I'm going to interrupt you for a minute. Because so already you have learned, because I know in the first time we met with you, we heard your story from the beginning, which I'd love you to chat for a minute about, like, what the doctors, they labeled you with many things. So, but what you've learned is that you have a relationship with your body, and you all have a relationship with anything that happens to it that you'll be able to respond to. So not only does that keep your brain calm, you know, but you have this ability to accept, or what Rose would say, you know, witness or recognize something and not be part of the fear. Like, you must have felt fearful, but you were able to, okay, I'm scared, I hit my head, but I'm going to be okay. Like, chat about what was going on. Like, what the deep feeling was. Did you go into a little bit of fight or flight, and then you're like, nah, I'm okay?
It would have been very brief, like a few seconds worth of it. I landed, I took my helmet off. There was a big gash on the back right side of it where I had hit. And it's like, ooh, that wasn't nothing. And then I just stood there and I had some water, and we got back on the road about 10 minutes later, and a few minutes had gone by, and I had just said, like, I just feel a little slower than I feel like I should feel right now. So how close are we to the main highway? I think my buddy had said we can do an alternate route that's coming up in 15 minutes or something like that. And so we took that and we just went to the hotel. But again, I don't have to be panicked about this, but I do want to make sure that I have all of my faculties. Turns out I didn't, but I'm going to be fine in the long term. I mean, again, it's very subtle, but it's like, if you would have talked to me, if the three of us would have been on this 6 years ago or 7 years ago, and I was telling you this story about me hitting my head, I would have immediately thought that I'm going to be having, you know, seizures in 3 months, and I'm going to have sensitivity to light, and I'm going to have kind of all these things that happen to some people that have head trauma. But I had just said to myself that, hey, even if I do, there's nothing I can do about it now. And so what's the point of freaking out? And if it does happen, then it will happen and I'll deal with it whenever. I mean, I had like one of the easiest no drama recoveries probably in the history of concussions, probably because I took that route, right? I mean,
because you understand that the mind and body are intimately connected.
Yeah. Yeah. I went to the doctor when I got home. The way the healthcare system works here was just kind of a strange, and I was like, basically I had gone back to work and I was having a conversation with a client of mine, and like, they were asking me questions and I just kind of felt a little behind in how I was answering them. Like, it's tough to describe, but it was just, they would ask me things and then I would just kind of say, I just couldn't find the words that I wanted. It's tough to explain. Yeah. I had to pause, which isn't really like me. So that's when I did go to the doctor and they did evaluate me, and I had said, you know, I think I'll be fine. I just, a couple of days of like not going through negotiations and things like that with a client. And I think I'll be okay. And he had said, well, you came in here and you told me what happened, and I can't let you leave because of liability until you take a CT scan. So I wasn't allowed to leave until I got a CT scan, which I did. And then I got the bill for, you know, hundreds of dollars later, when he said I couldn't leave. And I kept thinking, like, gosh, if I couldn't leave and you're liable, shouldn't I send this bill to you, right? But everything was fine. And he had said, you know, watch yourself for up to 5 weeks, which I did. And once we got past a couple of days, I was good to go.
Yeah. Well, it's a matter of concussion. The brain is so soft. It just hits the bone.
Yeah.
And it needs that time to recover.
Yeah.
But the thing is that it's the courage.
Yeah.
To know that you're not going to panic.
Yeah.
That's so important. And every time a patient or a potential TMS person goes to the doctor, there's a panic going on inside them about the fact that this symptom is life-threatening or is going to debilitate them forever. And you're talking about a real scenario that could have debilitated you,
right.
But you kept that distance. Yeah. And then you were able to see what was going on. But the panic in the TMS patient is going to override everything. And that's why I thought, you know, when having talked to you over several periods now, and I realized that you come into courage first. Courage is what happens for you.
Tova, you had mentioned something when I talked about kind of like the full story and like having a diagnosis from, and I mean, you've got the back. So thoracic outlet syndrome was the predominant diagnosis. Yeah. And doing what you have done for so many years, I know you know exactly what's going on with thoracic outlet syndrome.
It is a terrible, it's not a fun thing, but it is for sure fixable.
Yeah.
It's not permanent.
In my line of training in CrossFit and weightlifting and powerlifting, just the nature of the presses and the pulls that you're doing, it, at least at the time, it was really an in vogue kind of thing. Like, it was talked about a lot, like that particular thing, which probably is how it somehow creeped into my unconscious or my subconscious.
I just want to say, thoracic outlet syndrome is just in layman terms, it's just an incredible encroachment somewhere specifically, like around the brachial plexus around here, that just cuts off. It's just 10 times a pinch nerve. Like, it can really create. And it's like you've got all this traffic jam in a place where so much energy has to go to your arm, your finger, your shoulder. And they call it thoracic outlet syndrome. So go ahead.
Yeah. So at that time, because the recovery was always explained to me as something very prolonged, I always thought, like, in 6 month spans, if it's June, what can I start? I can't think about doing anything besides recovering from this until December, as an example. But I've come to find, with kind of doing a lot of this TMS type stuff for so many years now, that no, like, I can literally think in terms of what am I doing an hour from now, as opposed to everything's blocked or shut off for the next 6 months because I need to recover from this thing. So, Rose, you call it courage. I would have just called it confidence or indifference, because for me in my life, like, all those are pretty much the same at this point. And it's strange, you know, like, I would love to just have a conversation with the different practitioners that had said that this is the thing and this is the only way to cure that thing.
Or it's incurable, because some talk was like, it's permanent for life. You're going to have it for life.
Right. So it would be like, have a pec minor removal or have a scalene removal. Like, those were kind of the discussions, or like a first rib resection or something like that was a lot of the discussion then, in order to have that pain go away. But what I've experienced since then is that in certain times of life, and oftentimes I don't know exactly what it is, and I don't even know if that necessarily matters to know exactly what emotionally is going on at that moment, but more so to like tell myself, hey, like, it's going to be okay. And that will make the pain go away, which is very strange to say, because again, if it was said to me for so long, this is the only way to get rid of that. Thus, I was in pain until I could envision myself having those parts of my body anatomically removed. But now, like, you know, we could have been talking an hour ago and I could be having enormous pain in all those exact same spots. But then we have this conversation now and it could be totally gone. I mean, I have lots of instances where I'll have quite a bit of pain for 10 minutes at a time or an hour at a time, and kind of give it some thought and do the emotional work, which the term work isn't probably all that accurate, but some introspection, and it's gone really quickly after that. And usually this is something where weeks or months go by without an interruption. But sometimes it's more frequent than that. But again, my definition of cure for the people that will email me about the podcast is, I just really say, like, hey, when you understand what's going on, or you get any sort of a dent in how you feel, or you kind of get the waxing and the waning and something that's non-consistent, like, to me, that's a cure. And now Nicole Sachs has this great phrase that she uses, which is, I have a cure for chronic pain, but I don't have a cure for human pain. And, you know, again, like, so when I talk to other, like, friends of mine who may have a chronic shoulder issue or an elbow issue or whatever, and I'll say, like, this is the kind of stuff that everybody deals with in some way, shape, or form. And they'll say, well, like, you know, my best friend doesn't have an elbow problem. Well, like, tell me about your best friend then. Are they ever talking about anything chronic? And it's inevitably like, oh, well, you know, they get migraines, or hey, they've got eczema, or hey, like, they've, like, there's something. Everybody's got something. So for me, it's mostly usually either my very low back or my neck or my trapezius or something like that. But I know it's not going to stick around forever, and so it doesn't.
Hmm. Yeah, and you know that it's something that creates a need for checking out on on your belief system, doesn't it?
Yep.
That I mean, yeah, it's merely, I shouldn't say merely because it diminishes the fear of it, but it's actually just a messenger, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. So what we do is we kill the messenger rather than listen to the message, don't we?
Yep.
With in the medical system. Yeah. 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 And then the messenger, a new messenger comes in a different model then to give you more problems. Yeah.
I'm going to answer River's question, but what after you answer that, could you please share some of the insights and methods that you do use when you got to go deeper? You share it with us, like what your because obviously it's become automatic for you. That's why you're living courage. You're living with courage. You're living with some fear, but the fear is not running your life because you have a way of communicating, a new language of the way that you talk with your body. So maybe you'll be answered also as you answer River, River Memphis. I haven't seen you in a long time, River. You used to come on earlier. Here's his message. Hi, Eddie. Huge fan. Listen to all the time. I'm wondering what you think about Lyme disease. And if you have ever talked with anyone who has overcome it using TMS principles.
So one thing that I'll say is it's very difficult to remember all the conversations after 260 of them. but I can't recall if somebody specifically has come on there, but I'm nearly sure that the...
I'm sure. We've had a couple, so just by the way.
Yeah, in the TMS forum, I always point people there because there's a success stories database that's a good place to go after. And thank you, drsarno.org. There's also a search function there that you can use. That's usually, I'll send people to those two places. But the thing is, like, it has definitely been talked about at least once. And if it's been talked about at least once, then the process would be exactly the same as it would be for the things I'm talking about or for somebody with migraines. I had this... there was a corporate trainer that worked at, or she was contracted at the company that I was working for a few years ago. And I remember like she had shown some kind of graphic up on the screen that was very much in this realm of the stuff we're talking about. But she wasn't saying those things specifically. She was talking about business principles and having fear around something or whatever. And, you know, this, she's like a really high, well-known person in the business community in my region. You know, she's somebody that people probably pay $2,000 an hour to have come and speak to their company. Maybe even more than that. And I had pulled her aside after the thing was over and said, hey, this looks like, you know, I'm like, I do this podcast and I don't know if you know, if you're going to know anything I'm talking about, but this sounds really familiar. It sounds like some of the stuff I've read from Dr. Sarno's work, and her eyebrows kind of peaked. You know, she was putting her stuff away. And then as soon as I said that, she stopped and she had said it actually is from that. And she told me that she had migraines for years and years and like decades, and she's in her 40s now. And she said that once, I forgot exactly the phrase, but it was something along the line, I'm paraphrasing, something along the lines of, once I realized that my migraines weren't coming from something physical, but more because I was watching my parents throw dishes at each other when I was a little kid, things really started to open up for me. And I thought, man, that's like, that's pretty powerful. That's crazy, you know? As far, I'd have to go back and look for Lyme disease specifically. But I know it's there. Like Tova had said, she knows that it's there.
Let me just frame, and then Rose, I'd like to get your opinion. Lyme disease is an infection, or when the tick bites you and you have reaction, and then the body heals. It's not supposed to be permanent. There's no reason it should be a permanent. Your body is in shock. It goes through it goes through different changes. I don't know much about Lyme, but it's a condition that heals. And it's this long COVID, this long Lyme disease issues that's become our society, our medical society, that the doctors are like, well, let's treat this. Let's treat the cause. You got the Lyme disease. Why did I heal from the tick bite and you didn't? That's what we're talking about. So it doesn't matter about the label. What do you think, Rose?
Yeah. Well, the thing is that as Eddie just said, there's something else going on in your life. And I love the idea of the lady reading Sarno with her migraines and realized that she was witnessing her parents throwing dishes at each other. I thought, yes, I mean, that's an exaggeration. But in actual fact, when I talk to patients, I find often that it's been subtle, that childhood trauma has been so subtle and they can't pick it up. You know, like something, mother and father not talking to one another, or as another lady told me, how the mother and father didn't talk, but they made the child the conduit. So then her chronic pain came when something reminded her of that as an adult, like, for example, headaches. So the headache would come on when someone put some responsibility on her that wasn't her responsibility. It's so subtle, you can't even see it until it's actually opened up and freed. And I mean, that's the beauty about it. As Eddie said, these symptoms are always going to be there, and they're our sort of messenger. But there's no need to kill the messenger. The important thing is to recognize that that messenger is giving us a message. We've got to read it. And that's what Eddie's talking about, reading the message rather than trying to kill the messenger. You know, blame the headache on the fact that I've got this constant headache, so I'll never be able to do anything. So your story is just perfect for River, maybe, to see that the story keeps on going on about the Lyme disease rather than what's going on underneath. Some relationship, some self-esteem, something else is going on for that person. And
I'm curious,
rather than deal with that.
Do you two happen to, and I'm like side Googling, trying to see if I can find an answer to my question, but you two might have it. Do you recall the date that I would have been on last time?
Yeah, I could find it right now. But if
it was episode, it was episode 125, but I don't know the date on that.
I'll find it. Why?
So I'm just thinking back to that that time, and the way that I talk about this or describe the story would kind of hinge on what date that was. Because I remember my dog. Did we talk about my dog at that time? Like, does that sound familiar?
Yes,
at all?
Your dog. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I can't remember if he was in poor health or had he passed away by that.
He had passed.
Okay.
Let me find
Yeah. So that was kind of, that was a big piece of it. I mean, I think it certainly was, because I just kind of watched him wither away for 2 or 3 months before that actually happened. And then our cat, who we got the same year as that dog, disappeared without a trace in June. And we still haven't found her. And I dealt with that very differently than I did the dog. Probably the reason that I didn't have any kind of like recurring pain issues or anything like that that came up afterwards. Cause I did, like, I took time dealing with it in a different way than I was sort of, dealing with Barclay's death or
demise.
The way that his health was declining. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, the date's not important now. Cause I was just curious if it was before or after that.
Here it is. It was said, here it is. No.
And welcome.
How do I find the date?
I hear it.
Yeah, how do I find the date?
It's not on it, Tova. It's not on it. You're looking at YouTube.
Find it on YouTube.
No.
Here it is. June 9th, 2020.
Oh, wasn't it? It wasn't.
No, like it was later after than that, Tova.
I've been on twice. That might have been the first time.
Yeah, that's the original one. Yeah,
there was a second one, though. There was episode 8, and then I was back again on 125, if I remember.
Yeah, I want to also mention, did you finish your thought, Eddie?
Yep. Yeah, that was all I had.
Because even before we asked you to come on the show a month ago, just 2 days ago, Brad, who... we're going to have him on again. You guys are great. You're so profound the way you guys, like Brad answers a lot of inquiries on the TMS, the Mind Body Syndrome Facebook page. And he's profound. He's an incredible, he's very literate, like not literate. Yeah. He's just profound in his expression.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
So he left something so wonderful. But Rose still had the idea about courage, but he left a line from a favorite philosopher, Eric Hoffer. Anger is a prelude to courage. Whatever rage, anger, fear lies below your chronic pain, it's the first step in building the courage to face the things you've been avoiding or repressing. That was like Brad's line.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, I'm thinking about you, and then It's sort of like the universe is sort of like talking to us.
And what I tend to like say to people, sometimes I say it too soon and they want to throw the the microphone at me across the Zoom, because I say to them, well, are you ready to find the gift in your trauma or your anger or your fear? Because ultimately that is a pain reprocessing, kind of like, let's find safety.
Yeah.
Let's find love. Let's find compassion. Let's find, you're not a victim. You're a victor. So I want people, to somehow get to that place. And because, Rosa taught me something when we first met, like some pain becomes your friend and it's not such a great friend and you're kind of like addicted to it. So How can it work for you? And then you can move through it.
Yeah, it's funny you use the word addicted, because there was a podcast episode where I used the title maybe 3 years ago that said Addicted to Pain. That was the title of the podcast, because that is really what it is. No, Brad's a great guy. Him and I had started – so the story of the group that him and I run now was originally started by Steve Ozanich maybe 7 or 8 years ago.
By the way, off the record, if you ever – I want to bring him on our show, but he's not responding. If you ever – get in touch with him and see if he wants to do a little show with Rose and Tova, the grandmoms.
So he's been in the midst of travel season. He's in the midst of the Seattle tech scene is very, so he works in tech. He's an engineer. And if you didn't know that, in our region has been really slaughtered with tech layoffs in the last three or so weeks. So I imagine he's sort of between Google, Microsoft, Amazon, and Meta. So all those offices are within 20 miles of my house. I think they've laid off something like 58,000 or 60,000 workers.
Oh my God.
And so he's an engineer in that field in this city. So I would imagine that, he's probably.
Well, Eddie, my gut feeling is just he left the Facebook page to you guys. I think he's moved on from people need to do. They need to come out of this communication and this world and move on. And that's my feeling. So if you see him, if he's interested or not.
Yeah, totally. Well, what I was going to say is that Steve Ozanich had left it to a couple of other members. So Steve had kind of left, I think, because he was sort of getting the same questions all the time, which was, I have my elbow hurts. Is this TMS? Right. So he's spending all day answering these exact same questions. He passed along to a couple of members who they kind of got sick of the same thing, gave it to Brad and I, cause we were fairly active in it. And then just by coincidence, Brad happens to live 12 miles south of me. So whenever I have any sort of an issue where I suddenly have a spasm or anything like that, he's the first person I message. And it's usually he has a very frank conversation with me, but just, what's going on in your life or what's going on emotionally. So he knows a lot of things that make me tick and not so tick and shut down and all that kind of stuff better than anybody outside of my wife, probably. We haven't known each other that long, but we've gone to a couple of baseball games together. And, I know I can trust him. He's sort of like my pain buddy. Which I would encourage anybody that's listening or watching, like
your scuba buddy.
Yeah, get yourself a pain buddy. I think it's somebody that you like that understands this stuff.
What's it called? Somebody spots you. You're being spotted.
Yeah, and because I think the biggest part of that, I think one of the things that really I've joked about this a lot, but like one thing that COVID did, meaning that period of time, not the illness, but the period of time where everyone slowed down, shut down. There's really very few get-togethers and family gatherings, stuff like that. Is that, to me, the biggest part that was missing is that now you don't have the family get-togethers where 15 people sit around and talk about what hurts and what thing they've been diagnosed with and what kind of pain they're having and all this stuff. And now it's back, so you get to experience it all again. Everybody talking about all the things that hurt and all their problems. When it's tough, because I have like siblings that might come and start talking about their shoulder hurting or their knee hurting or whatever. And I can't, if it was Brad coming to me, my pain buddy, and saying all that, I could call him out on his BS and I could say, what's going on in your life? And it's probably this, this, or that. And you need to, like, this is something you need to deal with. You can't go to a doctor because they're not going to deal with it. They're not going to give you the, you can get over this very quickly, but here's some things you need to think about. I can't say that to the people in the circle, like in the.
That's right.
So
that's very annoying, isn't it?
Brad does. He's like, get over it.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, him and I, when we've done an episode together, because we've done in-persons in my garage, and we both, it was funny. It was in the summertime. This was a few years ago, but I was wearing a tank top. I've got a lot of visible tattoos. He shows up wearing a tank top. He's got a lot of visible tattoos. So I called the episode, the title of it was something like, two tattooed guys in tank tops talk about their feelings. And that's what we did for two hours. We just talked about our feelings.
I want to see it.
Yeah.
First of all, you have two daughters.
Yeah, I got two little girls too. Yeah.
You're never going to get away from it. God gave you that purposely to keep you healthy.
Yeah. No, they're great. Good kids. Yeah.
So in the bigger picture, This whole notion of having a pain buddy is not about talking about the smoke. It's talking about what creating the smoke, the fire. So when we spend our time talking about the symptoms, like with River just now, talking about the symptoms, but never asking ourselves, what actually is going on? Am I frustrated with myself? Am I frustrated with my environment? What am I frustrated about? Or how do I feel about whatever's happening? And the more we spend time on the smoke, the less time we've got to put out the fire. So I don't know if that's a good metaphor, but I find it very, very helpful when I'm talking to people to remind them that we'll spend more time on the fire and get the fire brigade in, which is therapy or whatever, or journaling or breathing or whatever, and more time there getting rid of the fire so the pain buddy isn't someone that tells you how bad their pain is, or that my pain is worse than your pain, and if only you had such a bad back pain as I had, you wouldn't be complaining about your neck pain. But we're not actually interested in that. We're interested in what's going on in the
keeping
heart.
You accountable and honest. So tell us, Eddie, a little bit more about what some of the insights that you, besides what you brave courageously did when you hit your head against the blog and ripped up your helmet. I can't imagine the force, the impact of that, and maybe the whiplash that happened to your neck. Forget that. But what I want to ask, and what Rose and I would love to know in the audience and the listeners, is can you give us some insights of what you do, which has become automatic after all these years of, you know, the struggle and the suffering, and now that you're riding the wave, because you're, like you said, there's a book that I read called Whatever Arises, Love That. Like, you're just in this great acceptance mode. And I say it in every show. Michael Galinsky told us the movie was going to be called All the Acceptance, but it wasn't going to sell in the box office. So we're talking about how well you're accepting your reality and creating your reality to work for you. And share how you do that.
Yeah. Again, the best way that I can illustrate a lot of this stuff is just stories and anecdote of past experiences or whatnot. There was a time, I can't remember if I told this story or not. I'm trying to even remember the year. It was probably 2020. 2020 probably, yeah. It might have been 21 actually.
Are you a perfectionist? You need to know the exact year.
No, so I will tell you that. I'm a recovering perfectionist. So my wife always jokes I'm tremendous at remembering dates, like, and I'm trying to pull a Schubiner and unlearn some stuff. So unlearning dates, and you'll notice I'm giving broad pieces of time. I'm saying 2020 or 2021. I will, even if we talked about this a year ago, I would have said March 16th, 2021, and it occurred at 6:57 a.m. So I'm a recovering perfectionist in the regards of
time.
Thank
you for sharing.
Yeah, and I tell the same thing to people if I get a message where they're saying, you know, my IT band that's connected to my, they're giving me all this anatomy and they're saying, I think it's this, and that. And I'm like, first of all, you need to just say your leg and don't say all this other stuff. because it's true, like you can very much zero in on things like that, and now you're spending time on the minutiae instead of just the global problem, which can be a lot quicker. So I was doing a lift. So I lift every single morning. I lift heavy every single morning. I'm not old, but I'm not a spry chicken now. I'm 37 years old, and I am vastly stronger and quicker and just a better athlete now than I ever even was in my teens or my 20s or probably even when I was in my early 30s. And I was lifting a weight that was not crazy. It was not new. It was one that I've done a bazillion times. And my my lower back just felt like someone stuck a hot knife in the bottom of it. And I went down and I couldn't move my legs. And the legs were in like the fetal position. And I just couldn't move. And I army crawled to my phone, which was maybe 10 or 12 feet away. And I text Brad, my pain buddy. And I said, man, I'm in the garage right now. And I can't something felt like it went in my back and it's killing me. And he's like, whoa, like, you know, well, what do you think's going on? And I had just said, it's so stupid and happened in such a dumb way that like, there's life stuff. There's gotta be life stuff. And I kind of just started laughing, like, which sounds really like, it sounds like an antagonist, like in a thriller, or like a horror movie, right? Like you experience pain and then you laugh in the face of that. Like not taking it seriously.
Isn't that a defense mechanism, right, Rose? Like a defense mechanism.
It could, yeah. It certainly could have been. For me, it was just more like something's up. I know it's not the thing that I immediately would have thought years ago, where it's just, hey, I messed something up anatomically. It was frightening, right? So again, like the best reference I have is Eddie as an athlete in his 20s. This would have been something where I would have probably gone to urgent care. They probably would have given me, I don't know, pain, whatever they would prescribe me. And then I would go off and I'd probably go see some specialists and I would keep going down that dark hole. And I'm sure it would have just, the pain would have continued or gotten worse or whatever for weeks or months or whatever as I'm nursing this thing. But instead I do what I always do now and sort of smirk at it, laugh at it. I'm a big proponent. The greatest tool I have in my toolbox is really like somatic tracking, somatic experiencing, feeling in my body. It's for me, it seems to work. Like there's some people.
I mean, you're telling yourself you're safe, that everything's okay. Is that what you mean by?
Yeah. And I just call it being able to weather the storm. I mean, what I do, and I've done it in the last couple of days, I've done a couple of 2 or 3 minute sessions, which I find to be almost like recharging my batteries and it can sustain me for weeks is kind of how I feel, which sounds so kind of woo woo, but that's really how I see it. Almost like a superhero. That's mm-hmm. like Tony Stark recharging his arc reactor that's in his chest. In Iron Man, that's kind of how I see it. But basically just bringing attention or awareness like to mm-hmm. the actual like sternum heart mm-hmm. area. And I'll sit there and nothing will happen for 30 seconds or a minute or whatever. And then mm-hmm. I just start feeling this burning and heat and swirling and like something feels really off and chaotic. And there's a great scene in the movie, I Am Legend. That's one of my favorites ever with Will Smith. And it's the end of the world. It's an apocalyptic type movie. And he's laying in his bathtub and he's just huddled up in the fetal position. He just hears these zombies and this chaos and the end of the world going on outside, but he's there with himself and he is safe. Like he knows that he is safe. And that's what I compare it to. It feels like an anxiety attack times 20. And after 2 minutes or so, it's completely gone. There is no, I don't have any, that storm has gone away. Right. The way, and I think of it as like, if a wave is coming at you and you're standing on the beach and a big tidal wave is coming at you, there's nothing you can do. You can't run away. You can't, like, that's the force of nature. So the wave hits you and it crashes onto you. And the only way to get past a wave is literally to go through it. So that's how I always think about that. But with this particular instance, I was going to take my normal rest day the next day, which is always on a Thursday. I took the day off from the gym as I expected. But the day after that, I was back in the gym doing exactly what I had written up and had planned previously as if there was nothing. And it was gone by the end of that day.
I mean, that was keep you in a fetal position. That's a pretty strong spasm. So
yeah, it was the most intense one I've had. But
there was there some deep feelings? Was there something going on? Like, did you feel like you had to do some journaling maybe to work through it? Did you feel like you had to be mindful the whole day? Like talk a little bit more about some of the, because things don't, I mean, it goes away, but then you're still having the memory of it. It was a trauma that in that moment. So
yeah.
Tell us a little bit more about, can we talk a little bit about feelings? Is that okay?
Yeah. So again, the idea of feelings, and I didn't think about this until a couple of years ago. I think Jim Prusak might have actually did a video on like the definition of feelings, because feelings forever, like to me, were sort of definitionless, like for lack of a better word. When you actually think about it, like feelings, where if you were to ask somebody that knew nothing about any of this, just, you know, a regular Joe Schmo, like had a regular job, whatever, and you just said, tell me what a feeling is, I don't even know what the answer would be. Maybe I should walk out. Maybe my next time I walk the dog, I should just ask the next person I pass, tell me what a feeling is. But it's, oh, go ahead, Rose.
And then they tell you about a thought.
Yeah.
Not a feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I mentioned really
a thought about a feeling.
Yeah. I mentioned really early in the conversation that kind of this inner body, Cheryl had just said inner body awareness, but that's kind of how I had described it earlier in the call. It literally is a feeling. Like I'm like, there might be a lot of stuff going on chaotic in my life, whatever. And when I sit back and kind of have these sessions, which it could be at my desk or it could be on a walk or it could be on a motorcycle ride or laying in bed or whatever, I'm just letting myself feel it. And that's it. I'm not trying to connect it to anything.
You're not reacting. You're simply just witnessing, maybe, yeah?
I've done a podcast episode called The Witness, and it's and The Watcher for that exact same thing. Seeing myself as the watcher, just observing the storm and all that kind of stuff, but I don't need to know the story behind the storm, just that the storm is there and that I'll be okay. That's really the, like, what's been most powerful for me is doing that. And I've noticed that, like, when I've had symptoms that tend to last longer, it's because I've deviated off of that formula, where maybe I try and almost like force my way into somatic work. Say, okay, I've got to sit down now for 2 or 3 minutes and do this. And like, I'll set a timer. Like it's, there's too much intention behind it as opposed to just I'm here and I'm present and
observing.
That's it.
Wow.
Observing. Right. When I'm trying to be a participant, that's when I find no success. When I'm being a watcher, that's when I find
perfect.
All the success.
I'm going to write that down.
That's what she spoke about last week. That's what she spoke about last week. Dr. Melissa Farmer, how she, I love when people, it's such an important tool about the witnessing. It's absolute response, and the brain's like, oh, I can go be a brain now. I don't need to be in fight and flight. Yeah. I can pull that inflammation away, and I can pull that muscle. I can bring all that blood and oxygen now, because you're just letting calming down. That's just absolutely profound.
I adopt that in a lot of the, I try to translate it into business. Work, like I'm in sales again. I do things like forecasting and all that kind
of
stuff.
It's a relationship, of course. Relationship.
Well, and so my whole thought behind this work in particular, and then also just my work in general, is that, hey, like if I put in the work that I know it takes to be successful, then I will, and I don't have to freak out too much about if I have a slow week or a slow month or whatever, because it will come around and it'll be just fine. But like, my supervisors hate to hear stuff like that, right? They want to know, why isn't everything moving the way that it should right now? And I'm just like, I know it's going to be just fine. So I don't, but again, 6 or 7 years ago, or a salesperson in my 20s, everything would have been a crisis. If there wasn't a success every single day, there would have been a crisis. But what I'm finding is that having fewer successes in a day, but understanding that that's fine, I'm having equal amounts or much higher level of amounts of success over the course of a broad year. It's just a really different, I don't know. It's
mindset, I would say. It's like the stock. I was thinking about the stock exchange when you were talking to me just now. Like people panic when it goes down, but next week it'll be up again. But they just go into the panic of today, and they sell rather than hold and see what's going to come up again. Yeah.
Wow. Amazing.
Yeah. So but again, noticing the panic and observing the panic.
Yeah.
If I can utilize what you've just said in a pain management model, it's observing the panic and going through it, as Cheryl said, on her boogie board, because Cheryl's a water skier.
Yeah.
And, oh, okay.
And she can do the one.
She also had every itis in the book. Every itis you can name. And she was a client of Rose's, and we had met her together, but she did some wonderful ISTDP work. And she literally, she recovered from all these itises.
Well, amazingly. I would presume, Tova, it's not that you recover from them, but you know the value of them. You know that if I've got a somatic symptom, there's something going on. And as Eddie said, I love it. Watch it without intention.
And all the rage, Larry David, who is one of my favorite comedians and television writers ever, probably actually my favorite. I'm so jealous that Michael got to even have a even be in the same room as Larry David, to be honest. But he was talking about how he was diagnosed with all of the itises.
There was
something else that I was gonna, oh, okay. So being in tune is something I think about too, where like there's been the way to which I may get a symptom is fairly formulaic. Step one, I see it in a lot of ways, is like if I start obsessing over anything, when I say obsessing, like it could be researching a particular cell phone or going back and forth between like a cable service, like things that are inconsequential, but I find myself thinking about researching them for a lot of, like spending a good amount of time. I know that there's something deeper emotionally, but if I don't pay attention to that, that's when I'll start to get a symptom. So another practice is just...
Explain that to me again, sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. So I had given in I was having a conversation with a friend therapist of mine on the podcast a couple of years ago, and I was talking about this motorcycle that I was lusting over. And I had said, like, I've got these spreadsheets about comparing the two, and like, here's some things one does better and some things, but, and I just couldn't make a decision. I was just, you know, there was a lot of ping pong going back and forth of them. And that's usually my first like knock on the shoulder that says, hey, like, you got to kind of slow down and just sort of spend some time either doing somatic work or just like, just chilling, like, you know, get like something's up, something deeper is up right now. And if I don't do that, that's when I will get a physical symptom of some kind in the back or whatever. So being able to like kind of identify and slow down when I start to ruminate over things for too long, because that's like the initial tap, you know, that's like the tap tap on the
shoulder.
That's
your pattern, but you notice your pattern. That's you being Eddie.
Yep.
So you can't fight that. So you got to ride that wave too.
Okay, so that's obsessing is the first. Yeah. So what's the next?
The next is the physical symptom. It could be the lower back or the neck or whatever, but it's kind of like, hey, if you're not paying attention now, and you're obsessing over buying two different cell phones for too long without just making a decision and living with it, then you're going to get a physical symptom. So it's stopping and recognizing, hey, it's not the discussion between the two cell phones or the two cable services or the two motorcycles or whatever. There's something else that's under. That's when I'll get a spasm in my back or a spasm in my shoulder or something like that.
Wow. Amazing.
So you are equating somatic pain with indecision.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Could you talk about that a bit more deeply? Because would the indecision be something, how would I put it? Talking about an Apple and a Samsung, but we're actually talking more about indecision in our lives. And I suppose Melissa from our last program, who was a neuroscientist or doing a science degree, swapped to a psychology degree. But her somatic pain, her back pain, caused her to step back and see that she needed to make a decision, maybe. Is that what you mean? That the pain is going to drag you into making a decision, and unless you do so, the pain will continue?
No,
help
because
me to
I
sort that out a bit better.
Yeah, not quite that. So there's a wide range of indecision that could come. And if I don't look inward to tend to myself or whatever, then that indecision and that going back and forth goes away, because then I get a symptom of something. Because I don't even think about that indecision while the back pain is going away. Then I kind of have to go all the way back and do somatic tracking or do something, meditate or whatever, to kind of clear all that stuff out. So to me, it's never about making the decision, because I almost feel like just making the, like, if I'm struggling between two things, it just has more to do with it. It's a distraction for something greater or something else. And I've thought about this, like, wondering what is that rooted in, this, like, when that comes up, is there just an intense fear of making a big mistake? And my only logic I can place on that is, like, that would make sense to me if I had made a bad mistake in the past, which I don't. That's one thing too, is I've kind of always, like, ridden the lightning of safety for a long time in terms of decisions. Like, I'm not a big, you mentioned the stock market, Rose, I'm not a big risk taker. I just haven't been. Although some people would say riding a motorcycle is an enormous risk.
Well, but Eddie, doesn't it come down to the feeling, I mean, you're doubting, you're questioning, and it comes down to this feeling of fear of making a mistake, fear of not doing what I need to do.
Yep, 100%. Yeah, but again, like, to me, that would make more sense to me if I had made a lot of mistakes in the past or things that have not turned out okay. 99% of the time or more, when I make a decision on anything, the result seems to be pretty inconsequential, meaning, like, I could have picked the other way and it wouldn't have gone that much worse. So I don't know.
We're gonna end the program, but let's just end on the fact that there's no mistake.
Yeah.
You learn, you know, there's no loss.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, a step in the direction. So
sure. Tova, when we make a mistake and we're little, it can have consequences.
That's different.
And that pattern, you see, that pattern comes back.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I get a Samsung, well, then I won't be able to talk to the Apple people. And my best friend has got an Apple, so maybe I should buy an Apple. I mean, yeah. I'm making it up. But,
right.
Well, that's a true warranted thing, though. See, you two live in parts of the world where, in the United States, it is very so it seems like, and correct me if I'm wrong, seems like most of the world uses, this is totally in the weeds with the Apple Samsung conversation, but it seems like most of the world for, like, text messaging and chat uses WhatsApp or uses a third party something. That is not the case in the United States. So there is a very big divide between, it is not, I mean, it exists here, but it's not really a thing. So if you're, it's either the blue bubbles or the red bubbles, that's the Apple Samsung or Apple Android divide. And it is a real thing here, which is very disappointing. There's one other thing I'm thinking of that I don't know why it just came to my mind, but I had said that, like, 99% of, like, most of the decisions we make in life, even though a lot of times they feel like they're life or death, they're really not. There's some buddies and I are going to do a boys trip down to San Francisco in a couple of weeks, and the car that I had rented, it's like an Airbnb, but it's for cars, and the way that it's being done is the guy that owns the car is picking us up at the airport. We're dropping him off at his house 5 minutes away and all that kind of stuff. And my buddy was like, he's going to murder us. He's going to, like, this is going to go awful. And I had said, here's the thing. Probably, he said, you just have way too much faith in humanity and too much faith in people. And I had said, here's the thing. There's probably 0.1% of people in the world that have ill intent in some way. We're going to be just fine. And if we're not, we'll deal with it then. Exactly. But a lot of people really don't like that approach. But that's been, like, my, you know, it's been my way of living for the last couple of years, and it's really worked out okay.
Really amazing, really amazing. Well, Rose has to go to work. Rose has to go to work. I have to go to sleep. I just want to, you know, I'm far away from where I was born, but there's a lot of endorphins being secreted in Philadelphia right now because the Eagles are in the Super Bowl.
There sure are.
So here's one for Philadelphia. And you being across the nation, and, you know, just be careful. And maybe you should wear, now I'm being motherly, maybe you should wear two helmets next time.
I don't know if two helmets would be fit. I'll tell you what I replaced my previous helmet with is the safest helmet on the market. So if that helps, then
Yeah. So we're going to do this every few months because there's just so much to talk about. We didn't even cover the surface yet. Rose didn't get to do a little ISTDP on you. So next time, okay?
Yeah, I'm in.
No. Don't worry. Enjoy your day. Enjoy your sleep, Tova. Uh-huh. And anyone who wants to talk to Eddie, or he's got an amazing podcast. And Tova, would you pop it on the side there, please?
I will. I'll put it up on the Facebook page when we get off. But the Mind and Body Delete.
It's the Mind and Fitness Podcast.
What's the delete?
The mind and fitness.
It's the group of listeners. It's called the Deleters of Pain. That's what I call it.
Yeah. And the thing is that we didn't even get to the fitness. And it's an important, you know, I don't come from a fitness background, whereas Eddie and Tova do. And we haven't even got to that yet because that's the most important thing. No. You know, my biggest thing is going for a walk, although I do like doing weights. But at the same time, these two guests, these two participants, they know so much about it, and we haven't even managed to go there.
That's okay. Rose is coming to Israel in April to visit me for the first time in 3 years, and I'm going to get her in shape, in better shape. She's spiritually in much better shape than me, but I'm physically in better shape than her. So we're going to meet the meeting of the minds.
Or the meeting of defiance.
Yes. Anyway, so good to be here. What an hour. It's just my best hour of the week. Eddie, thank you so much. Cool. Bless your heart, Rose. I love you dearly. This will be on YouTube in the next couple hours. I'll put it up in the morning if anyone wants to watch it. It was an amazing show. There was enormous insights. Just a little gentle, soft sell for Rose and I. Rose and I are in practice. We we do therapy. We do pain psychology. We do pain reprocessing therapy. Rose is an amazing ISTDP therapist. We work together or separate, and we're able to help so many people recover from autoimmune symptoms and pain. And so if anyone needs to meet us in a complimentary consult, we're available. And okay, I'm going to say goodbye.
Cool.
Sweet.
Thank you both.
Say goodbye, Rose. All the best.